Hey there, welcome to the Lord to Death podcast. My name's Brett, and today, at the risk of dating myself, with the recent release of the new Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom, I thought it only appropriate to dive into some of the deeper lore of the Zelda series, and where best to start but the beginning. And today I want to talk about the creators of Hyrule, the world, the universe, the Golden Goddesses, also known as the Goddesses of Creation or the Greater Goddesses. And by extension, we'll be talking about the goddess Hylia, just because we're going to be talking about the creation of Hyrule and the Hylians. For the sake of brevity, when referring to the three golden goddesses, I will just say goddesses, and I will refer to them each by name when talking about them individually. And before we start, I just want to talk about the elephant in the room, and that is my pronunciation, which is, as always, terrible. But in particular, I just want to address Faror, which is pronounced a myriad of different ways depending on who you are. Some people pronounce it Farore or Farori or Feyror. I'm going to pronounce it Faror. And Hylia as well. I say Hylia because it's Hyrule. Some people say it's Hylia, and some people pronounce the Hylians as Hylians. I pronounce it as Hylians. So it's going to be Faror and Hylia. So with that out of the way, when I say that we're going to start from the beginning, I mean the beginning. I'm talking about a time where nothing existed except for chaos. Back in a time before spirits and life existed, the three goddesses descended upon the universe and began the creation of the world, each of the three playing a different role in line with their values. Din, with her strong, flaming arms, cultivated the land and created the Red Earth, as described by the Great Deku Tree. She is associated with themes that exemplify power and the elements of fire and earth. And in Hyrule, her presence can be felt more in areas like Death Mountain and the Elden Volcano. The race of Goron, the volcano-dwelling rock golems, are the ones that personify her power the most in Hyrule, boasting superhuman strength and hard shells that provide near invulnerability from physical attacks, as well as having the resilience to live inside of volcanoes. Symbols, talismans, and magic that are associated with Din are often red in color. As a culmination of all of the above, she was often referred to the Goddess of Power. Nehru poured her wisdom into the earth and gave the spirit of law to the world. She was responsible for establishing the physical and metaphysical laws of Hyrulean existence, as well as being the creator of time. She is associated with themes of wisdom and water, being worshipped as the goddess of the seas and other great bodies of water such as Lake Hylia. The Zora, the fish-like water-dwelling race, were the best representation of Nehru's gifts, being best known for their hierarchical form of government as well as their stoicism and great wisdom, and, of course, their affinity for water. Because Nehru was responsible for creating time itself, it's also possible that she was the one being worshipped as the goddess of time in Majora's Mask, but is often referred to as the goddess of wisdom and is associated with the color blue. Faror, with her rich soul, produced all forms of life who would uphold the law. She was the creator of all life that exists within the Hyrulean realm. Because of this, Faror is associated with regions that flourish with life, such as forests, like the Faerun Woods and the Lost Woods. In these regions, the forest-dwelling Kokiri and Deku races personify Faror's rich soul, being innocent and caring creatures with high inner awareness. In The Wind Waker, she is also worshipped as the goddess of the wind, which brought association to the wind instruments such as the ocarina and the flute, but was more known as the goddess of courage and was represented by the color green. Looking deeper into what their names mean, Din is the easiest, being a direct translation. Din can mean a chaotic and loud noise, and is also roughly the word for faith or religion in Arabic and judgment in Hebrew. As well, the word Din, spelled with a Y instead of an I, means power in words like dynamite or dynasty, which I guess means that you could technically pronounce it as dine, but that doesn't sound right. Nehru and Faror aren't quite as straightforward with their translations. Nehru can translate into a differently spelled Nehru. The YouTube watchers will benefit from having text on the screen, but the listeners are just going to have to use their imagination here. Spelled N-E-H-R-U instead of N-A-Y-R-U. Nehru coincidentally shares her name with, and I apologize for the butchering of this pronunciation, Jawaharlal Nehru, who has an association with the Panditji, was an Indian lawyer, politician, and statesman who became the first prime minister of an independent India. The connection between this person and the goddess who created the rule of law in Hyrule should be a little obvious, but it is a little bit of a stretch. Furore can only really be associated roughly with the word flore or flora and fauna, which would make some amount of sense being the goddess who created life. But I want to make a note that neither of these are confirmed per se, and the only one that is a literal translation is Din. Nehru and Furore are theories at best and are probably the result of confirmation bias. And so there you have it, the three goddesses. Din, the goddess of power, Nehru, the goddess of wisdom, and Furore, the goddess of courage. Power, wisdom, and courage. Does that sound familiar to you? If you've played the games, it should, but we'll get back to that in just a moment. These goddesses were the most renowned and powerful deities of Hyrule, being the omnipotent creators of the world, but they are far from the only deities around. There are plenty of spirits and lesser gods, known as guardian deities, floating around Hyrule, such as the Great Deku Tree of the Kokiri Forest and Lord Jabu Jabu, who presided over the Zora's Domain. These are spirits that the goddesses created to protect Hyrule. But there are also false deities, or those who claim to be gods, such as Ganondorf, who bears the title of Dark Lord. He's worshipped by the Gerudo and others, but is not an actual god, much to his chagrin. But despite being the most renowned or accomplished gods, they are spoken of by very few people in Hyrule, and most of its inhabitants worship their own patron deities instead. And interestingly, the knowledge of the goddesses is limited to Hyrule alone, for the most part. However, as mentioned with Nehru, the goddess's presence can be felt in other lands such as Termina and the world of the Ocean King, implying that they created those as well. We know that both Termina and the world of the Ocean King are parallel worlds to Hyrule and they are not physically connected to each other. But if these goddesses made one world in the universe, then it's safe to assume that they created the other ones as well. But the whole parallel worlds thing is quite complicated and you'd have to go and look at the timeline to really understand where each world kind of separates. But that's another story for another time. I think it's interesting to note that the goddesses have never made a physical appearance in any of the games at the time of the recording of this episode. I feel like I want to say that because who knows what's going to happen in the future at the risk of, again, dating myself. They appear in flashbacks in Ocarina of Time when the Great Deku Tree is recalling their tale of creation, where they are shown as feminine humanoid figures. Their skin, if we're assuming that they had a similar physiology to the Hylians, is gold. But their figure, and more so their faces, are relatively indescript. There wasn't a lot of detail on their faces or on the rest of their bodies, and I don't know if that's just because it was on the Nintendo 64, or if maybe that was intentional. But we can call it a hardware issue for now. We see the goddesses flying through the cosmos with a blaze of fire in front of them, leaving streaks across the sky in the color of their association, red, green, and blue. We also see them depicted as statues in the Wind Waker on their own respective islands, which, when the pearls of the goddesses were placed upon them, granted passage into the Tower of the Gods, an old tower that granted access to Hyrule, which was, at that time, underwater because of a great flood that had happened prior. The statues are depicted as humanoid with long flowing dresses and hair, and they are dyed to match their respective colors. They're very much stylized to the look of the game, being very cartoony and cute. There are also statues in Twilight Princess, Skyward Sword, and Breath of the Wild, where they're seen more as angelic figures carved of stone. As well, there were a couple depictions of the goddesses in a tapestry-like style, like in the intro to A Link to the Past. Here, they're depicted as blonde with fair skin, much like Princess Zelda. And I think that's a pretty common theme, is that the statues or depictions of the goddesses tend to look a lot like the Princess Zelda. I would imagine that's probably because she is a Hylian and the goddesses created the Hylians, likely in their own image. That might seem like a bit of an odd tangent, but the point I'm getting at here is that there's no one depiction of the goddesses that is necessarily correct. Much like any real-life religious figure, it's open to the interpretation of the artist, which leads to the fan theory that the goddesses never even existed and that the story of creation, told by the Great Deku Tree, is rooted in myth rather than fact. Now, I don't think that this is a very popular theory, but it is out there and I think that the following disproves any of that nonsense. However, I think it's worth noting that, again, just like religion, things are exaggerated, right? No one story is going to be correct, and it could be an amalgamation of different people's tales and depictions that lead to one true image, but we'll never really know that. Anyways, after finishing their creation, the goddesses decide to take a well-earned vacation and departed for the heavens, but not before leaving behind one final gift for the inhabitants of their world, the Triforce. Three golden triangles, each representing an aspect of the three goddesses, power, wisdom, and courage. Eh, I told you we'd get back to this one. So I want to talk very briefly about the Triforce, because while it could be an episode on its own, I think it's very important to kind of establish the morality of the goddesses and how they interacted with the world. So the Triforce was in three pieces. The Triforce of Power was always represented as the top piece, the Triforce of Courage on the bottom right, and the Triforce of Wisdom on the bottom left. While each piece is technically separate, they're part of a whole piece referred to as the Golden Power, the Master Force, or the Power of the Chosen One. But what is the Triforce, and what does it do, and why is that relevant to the goddesses? If one were to touch the Triforce, then they would be granted any wish, regardless if the wielder's intentions were good or evil, with only one caveat. Only a mortal can use this power. Gods cannot touch it. The goddesses created this relic to give the inhabitants of their world absolute power over their future, good or bad. Whoever were to claim the power of the Triforce would have their vision of the world seen, and its effect would last until their death, assumedly, or until someone else claimed the Triforce. The wielder would, in essence, gain the power of a god, being granted near omniscience, power, and courage. The only ones who could stand up to this power were the goddesses themselves. And again, the Triforce was to be used to shape the future of Hyrule. Thus, if the wielder's wish was righteous and benevolence, Hyrule would enter a sort of golden age of peace and prosperity. On the other hand, if the wielder was wicked with their intentions, then Hyrule would fall into an age of darkness. The more the wielder believed in their wish, the more the power of the Triforce would grant them. So if you got all the way to the Triforce and wished that you could have pizza every night without getting heartburn, then your wish might be granted, but the kingdom wouldn't necessarily rejoice and prosper as a result. Much like the Force in Star Wars, the Triforce would attempt to shift the balance of good and evil depending on who wielded the power at that time. If a being with an evil heart were to claim the Triforce, a hero is destined to rise up to stand up against the darkness. It's not really clear, but I would imagine that that works both ways, and that if a pure heart would lay claim to the power, then an evil might pose more of a threat during their golden age as a means to sort of level the playing field. That, however, isn't very clear and is speculation at best. So the Triforce was created, and it wasn't just left out in the rain to rust like your dad's 69 Chevelle SS that's been on your front lawn for 40 years. It was kept in what would be known as the Sacred Realm and given to the goddess Hylia for safekeeping. While the goddesses did not design the Triforce to discriminate between good and evil, they did have a preference for it being kept in the hands of someone who wasn't going to cause an apocalypse on the world they had just spent so much time creating. The era that the goddess Hylia was entrusted with the protection of the Triforce was aptly known as the Eris of the goddess Hylia. Not exactly very creative, and the story around Hylia takes place in Skyward Sword. I'm going to summarize the story because it does relate to the goddess Hylia, and it does add a little bit more information to the story, so... During this period, a demon king named Demise, very clever, and his demon army rose up from the ground to attack the people of the surface in a campaign to claim the Triforce's power. Hylia, in a desperate attempt to save her people, the Hylians, shepherded them onto an outcrop of land and sent it skyward, creating a barrier of clouds underneath it to stop the evil below from harming them while the other races fought back against the evil. That seems fair, right? All in all, they succeeded in defeating Demise and sealed his soul away, but not without some consequences. Hylia was gravely injured and began a contingency plan that would ensure Demise would not rise up again. Centuries later, Hylia would reincarnate as a mortal girl named Zelda, although she had no knowledge of her previous existence as a goddess. She eventually comes to realize the truth and leads Link, a common boy who had hopes of being in the City Watch, on a quest to seal Demise's soul with the power of the Triforce. Link, being a total simp for Zelda, didn't question it for a second and put himself in harm's way at every turn for her approval, although he didn't know that she was a goddess until much later. Link and Zelda, with the power of the Triforce, ended up sealing Demise away, and they decided to come down from their floating city and bring the Hylians to the surface once more, now that it was safe to do so. Zelda's descendants would establish the Kingdom of Hyrule in her honor and created the royal family of Hyrule, where the tradition of naming royal women Zelda as an homage started. The Triforce was sealed in the Sacred Realm for safekeeping, access to which would be granted through the Temple of Time. The Sacred Realm was interesting because it didn't have any set rules as to how it appeared, and would mirror the heart of the individual who set foot in it. If that person was evil, then the skies would turn black and it would turn into a hellscape. But if the person were good of heart, then it appeared as a paradise of sorts. Because there was only one access point, the royal family of Hyrule appointed some sages to protect it. If one were to gain access to the Sacred Realm and claim the power of the Triforce, it would appear with three pieces as a whole. But if the person who touched the Triforce did not pass the vibe check and didn't pass an equilibrium of power, courage, and wisdom, then the Triforce would disperse into three separate pieces. This was again kind of a contingency by the goddesses to make sure that evil couldn't claim it as easily as good. In the event of Ganon trying to lay claim to the Triforce's power, since he did not meet the requirements, the relic split into three and granted Ganon only the Triforce of power, and transformed the Sacred Realm into an evil place. The other two pieces, Courage and Wisdom, were granted to Link and Zelda respectively, who bore the Triforce on the back of their hands. Destiny chose who bore the other pieces in these instances, and the wielders would have to seek the other to be granted the full power of the Triforce. So Ganon would have had to grab Link and Zelda, bring them back to the Sacred Realm, and use them to gain the power of the Triforce. However, there have been other people who wielded pieces of the Triforce who were not Ganon, Link, and Zelda, but those were the three main people. And they were not one person, but reincarnations of those people throughout time. It gets a little timey-wimey and weird. But enough about the Triforce and the Sacred Realm, because there is decades of information about the two that could be made into their own episode easily. So the reason for talking about the Triforce, the Sacred Realm, and Hylia was just to preface that the goddesses did have a preference for the Triforce's power to be used for good, and for the Land of Hyrule to thrive. Because, again, they didn't want to see Ganon go full scorched earth and ruin everything that they had built. However, there were times that the Triforce was not able to protect itself, and the goddesses did have to intervene with the world to keep some semblance of order. When word of the Sacred Realm and the power of the Triforce hit the newsstands, people from all over the land started a great war for the chance to hold the power for themselves. During this war, a tribe skilled in dark magic called the Dark Interlopers attempted to establish dominion over the Sacred Realm and establish power using the Fused Shadow, which was a sort of giant helmet that granted its bearer extreme power. We see this in Twilight Princess when Midna uses the Fused Shadow to turn into a giant spider monster. Some of the other deities, as mentioned before, the light spirits who were tasked to guard the lands, intervened at the behest of the goddesses. They used their magic to seal away the tribe and splinter the Fused Shadow to prevent further misuse and banish them all to the Twilight Realm. So the goddesses didn't interject personally here, but they did use the spirits to kind of act out their will. In another instance, without the Hero of Time in their timeline, Ganondorf was becoming an unstoppable force with no one to keep him in check. Trying everything, the people ultimately failed to stop him and were left to pray to the goddesses for help. The goddesses instructed people to flee to the mountaintops and caused a torrential downpour which flooded the land, turning mountaintops into islands and sealing Hyrule and the Triforce underwater, frozen in time. This is what we see in the Wind Waker. Other than that, the goddesses left behind several forms of magic and relics that would aid heroes to defeat evil. They left behind three magic abilities, Din's Fire, Faror's Wind, and Nehru's Love. They left behind the pearls, as mentioned before, in Wind Waker, to gain access to Hyrule and the Sacred Realm. And there were also tests for the hero to complete in order to get the three sacred flames that were necessary to obtain the Goddess Sword left behind by Goddess Hylia in Skyward Sword. I'm sure that there are other things left behind in other games, but you get the idea. Other than that, we don't have a ton to go off of. The goddesses were pretty ambiguous, and they created the world, the spirits, and the Triforce, and left it in the care of the goddess Hylia, who passed down their legacy through the royal family of Hyrule. Otherwise, they are largely forgotten in the land of Hyrule, and despite being the main gods, people decided to worship other spirits that were present in the world since the goddesses were not present. But their presence can still be felt through the gifts that they left behind. And with that being said, what do you think? Do you think that there's any credence to the theory that the goddesses never existed and that it's all just a myth to justify the creation of Hyrule and the Triforce because it is otherwise unexplainable? Or where do you think they went after they departed shortly after the creation of the world? Maybe they went to Cancun to enjoy their retirement. Who knows? You can find us online at Lord to Death on your favorite social media or podcast websites. If you have any topics that you'd like to hear about, please let me know and I'll be happy to make them an episode. And if you find yourself in a forest with a giant talking tree who's reading you their gospel, you should figure out if those mushrooms you foraged for dinner were hallucinogenic or not. And until next time, say ya.